Welcome to issue 20 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that will be sold at a slightly inflated price on eBay just after the show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm Dave McVeigh. I don't know about slightly inflated. I'm pretty large already. How are you, Richard?
Does that increase your value at all?
Not really.
I am so pumped after hearing that opening theme music, David.
I know. It's awesome. You know, it really makes me want to go watch Buffy again.
Well, we certainly read a lot of Buffy this week.
We did. But God, hearing that music again, it's like, oh yeah, now that's the spirit. That's the spirit of it.
That's what I needed at the start of every issue to get me going.
That was missing. I should have had one of those little computer chips. Yeah. Right, where you open the issue, it plays the theme.
Well, apart from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, this week we visit our favorite man in the log cabin, Alan Moore. And then we'll go through on a whirlwind tour through the wonders of WonderCon. Then our first look, finally, at Green Arrow from the CW's new series, Arrow. Mandrake the Magician comes to the cinema. And what's next for Chronicle director Josh Trank? Plus our kick-ass pick of the week, of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 8.
Damn straight.
The very long Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 8. But first, keeping with that theme, our kick-ass pick, clip of the week, our vintage clip of the week even, this one kind of keeps with the theme.
You're joking me!
That's usually the general idea, asshole.
How the hell do you expect me to do my graphics with this piece of crap, huh? What's the matter with you, huh? Holy crap.
Holy. All things held sacred.
Crap.
Waste matter discharged from animal bowels. Popular slang for an extreme negative. You're speaking colloquial English. More or less.
Go on, get out of here! Get help!
Leave the boy alone.
You don't want to mess with us, Miss TNA.
Gee, thanks. No offense, but are you some kind of... What's your name?
Ella. My name was Ella. But that was a very long time ago.
You don't want to mess with us, Miss TNA.
Well, if Miss TNA didn't give it away, then I think it's obvious that was from the 1996 adaptation of Vampirella.
I've got to see this movie. Where the hell did you dig
name,
that?
What's your name, but are you somebody or something?
I like how he says, what are you? What's your name?
And she's wearing like the red, you know, skimpy costume.
I definitely have to see this movie.
They come from like a planet of vampires.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I'm not sure if that's in the original comic or not, but they come from a planet of vampires.
Well, it's not in the reboot. As I said to you a couple weeks ago, I've actually been reading the new Dynamite run of Vampirella, which I'm actually quite enjoying. But no, they're just vampires in that.
Well, actually, that's why we're on the topic, David. Yeah, you've been reading Vampirella. What else have you been reading?
Oh, okay. Well, aside from a great deal of Buffy, I mean, a great deal of Buffy, I've been catching up with the Marvel titles for the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
So we're now up to The Incredible Hulk number 6, which is I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where I said it's the one where the Banner and the Hulk have managed to split apart. And Banner has literally gone insane because he can't stand the fact that he doesn't have the Hulk in him anymore, even though that's what he always wanted. And the Hulk, of course, doesn't care about Banner at all. And that's kind of interesting. It's an interesting story arc, which looks like it may be coming to a conclusion on the first 6. So we'll see where that goes after that. Been catching up with the New 52, of course. Some really interesting stuff happening, and I cannot believe these words are going to come out of my mouth. There's some really interesting stuff happening in Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
I know. It's frightening, isn't it? It's been one of the better books, and I've been maintaining this all along, David.
Yeah, I know.
I told you so.
You told me so. The first few issues did nothing for me, but it's actually built up into something special. I also finished reading Kick-Ass 2, which we are going to do as a pick of the week in a couple of weeks. So
yes, absolutely.
We'll hold off on that. I'm talking much about that. I have some things to say about it. but we'll hold off until we actually do that in a show. I've been following that for the last few months, and the issue 7, the final issue, finally came out. So it was interesting to have a look at that. Sorry?
I was going to say also I should point out that I think one of the things that came out of WonderCon, and I didn't pull this up as a story for today, but Hit Girl has been announced as a spin-off miniseries as well.
Yeah, I'd heard that. Yeah. I don't know if they kind of, we don't want to spoil anything, they might be setting that up at the end of Kick-Ass 2.
Right.
And the other thing I read was something that you threw my way, which I had never heard of before, which was a number one Saga.
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about that as well, so yeah. We may as well talk about that one. Saga was brand new book this week from, I think it was Image brought that one out. Mm-hmm. And it's by Brian K. Vaughan, who's done a lot of things, including Why the Last Man and one of the story arcs in this week's Pick of the Week, Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8. But yeah, it's an interesting book, isn't it?
I liked it a lot, actually.
Sorry,
I just had to lean away and cough. Caught me. no, I thought
sprung.
It was sprung. I thought it was a very interesting book. It's a very interesting first issue, and it is intriguing enough to bring me back to read more, which is more than I can say about other first issues that have come out.
Oh, what? Absolutely.
7 weeks ago. Anyway, seven months ago.
Exactly. It's a double sized first issue. The Image's original kind of solicitation described it as Star Wars meets Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I guess we should explain. It's kind of this alternate universe or this other universe, basically, where there's what seems to be mythical creatures because he's got like ram's horns and she's got wings. Yeah. And there's robot overlords. And it's kind of this odd, weird world. And so the first issue is a lot of world building.
Should we say horny robot overlords?
Horny, very horny robot overlords who are human, humanoid, but have televisions on their heads. It's very strange. But it's just odd enough that you sit there and go, I need to know more about this world.
Yeah, I mean, what Brian K. Vaughan's done in this first issue is set up really well. This really complex, rich world where you've got, obviously there's a war that's gone on at some stage and there's different things that are happening all across the galaxy. And all these different planets have been affected, and there's some kind of class segregation system going on. We're getting hints of that. We're only just learning little bits about our two main characters. And in fact, the person who's narrating the story is just an infant.
That's right. I love the fact that it's the baby that's been born is narrating it. And it's like it's almost a sardonic voiceover, though. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. it kind of reminded me of the film Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you know, how he keeps getting his narration wrong, you know?
That's right.
Like, you know, it's kind of like this unreliable narrator. You know?
Yeah, well, that first issue just came out this week. It came out on the 14th of March, and the next issue comes out on the 11th of April, so I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye out for that one.
Me too.
It was one of the hottest books that came out this week. The art by Fiona Staples is also excellent.
Yes, very much so.
The other new book that came out this week, the other number one that I read, was Fairest number one.
Haven't had a chance to read that yet, so what's that like?
Well, after 115 issues of Fables, I wondered where they had to go. Plus, there's Jack of Fables and all sorts of other spin-offs and things as well. This is the latest Fables spin-off, focusing ostensibly on the female characters.
Right.
Now, but this first issue is not really focusing on the female characters. It actually focuses on Alibaba, Prince of Thieves, who has pulled out a genie from the genie in the bottle. He thinks it's a genie. Turns out to just be another imp. He said, sorry, mate, you lucked out. You know, I'm not really what you want me to be. And he says, but if you sneak into that camp over there, you can put your thieving skills to the test. He says, there's a treasure hidden at the center of that camp. It's two women, both asleep, and only the kiss of a prince will wake them up. So if you are who you say you are, it'll wake them up. So he sends them in there, and then some shenanigans ensue from there, which I won't spoil for people who haven't read it yet. But look, you know, it's a well-written book. Uh-huh. I'm quite enjoying it so far. I really liked Fables.
I need to go back and read a bunch of Fables, I think is what I need to do.
Yeah, look, I've not read Fables for a while, but I've read the first 50, 60 issues, so I get that kind of world
right.
That it's being born out of. And so, look, you know, Fables is an excellent book by Bill Willingham, and this is his new book, same writer. And, you know, I just think the Vertigo world continues to grow in a really positive way. And again, that's something we'll talk about when we run down WonderCon in a moment.
Yeah, fantastic. Can I just throw one more in there as well? We're going to be doing a New 52 roundup coming up soon anyway. But I just wanted to throw in the latest Suicide Squad. Issue 7 of Suicide Squad is actually the origins of Harley Quinn.
For
the New 52. So it's probably not the same origins as before, but it's the origins of Harley Quinn. And it's pretty damn good.
No, I'm really looking. The number 7s that came out this week as well. Again, I've sort of left, as you said, left a few of those off there. The new Punisher is excellent, of course.
Oh, the new Punisher is amazing. Did you read issue 9?
Yeah, I have just read issue 9 now.
Oh, wow.
Punisher goes from strength to strength.
The last two or three panels is just fantastic.
Yeah. So that's wonderful. But the other ones from the new 52, the issue 7s that I've been reading. Look, the new ones, Batgirl, I'm continually impressed by it. I just love the writing around Barbara Gordon. I just think it's been really strong.
Agreed. And
introduced this new element to it. Superboy continues to be impressed me. It was one I left for a while to read. Now that I've finally gotten through the back catalog of that, and I'm up to issue 7. Really, really enjoying it. And I really want to know where this character's going.
I like the fact that the Superboy and the Teen Titans titles are now intertwined.
Yes, and Supergirl to a certain extent.
No, it's very good stuff. Actually, I got to say, the last Supergirl I read was also really, really good as well.
Yes,
I think the female characters are faring much better than the male characters in many ways.
I think that is the case too. And I'll tell you what, so speaking of female characters in comics, if you ever get a chance... great website. There's a column called She Has No Head. and it's a column over on Comic Book Resources. And it's written by, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to bring up, that's Kelly Thompson writes the column. And she often focuses on issues for women in comics or issues involving women in comics or takes a sort of slightly feminist slant towards comic books that have been out for the last... the last month or just a historical thing. You know, the last couple of columns she's written are like 25 great superheroine moments, support the good, no, it's not equal. And there was back on February 13th, which is one to read, is a love letter to Buffy. which is appropriate for our things. And she's, she sort of talks a lot about, sometimes why there are no female readers of comics and things like that. So really worth a read if you haven't read it. That's over on Comic Book Resources.
We'll make sure we put that link in the show notes as well.
Certainly will.
Yep, absolutely fantastic. All right, we should probably move this show along so we don't end up with another episode like Mouse.
Exactly. Although this was even our pick of this week is even longer than Mouse.
It was. So let's move along and we will play a little bit of this.
What a scoop!
All right, Richard, let's talk WonderCon, huh?
Okay, well, before we talk WonderCon, I'm going to mention one story very, very quickly.
No, I want to talk WonderCon.
No,
I'm joking.
Okay, well, we can mention him at the end, but Alan Moore, this is very quickly. Oh. we can't go an issue without mentioning Alan Moore. But one of the big stories actually that came out of WonderCon was actually Before Watchmen, because a lot of people, it was DC's first big chance to showcase Before Watchmen and all the stuff that would be happening over the coming months in there. And actually, it was funny, at the panel, they got at one fan who actually spoke honestly and said, you know what, I don't think it's necessary, but I'll probably buy them. I'll probably buy at least one of them,
Spoken like a true comic book geek.
Absolutely. But I mean, and he's right. I think DC actually, in all fairness, turned around and said, you know what, we kind of agree with you, but we it was something we wanted to pursue for ages, and obviously we had a lot of talent on board who wanted to do this. Now, Alan Moore's got a different opinion.
Before you go on, I kind of picture Alan Moore living out in his shack like the hermit from Life of Brian. That's all I've got to bloody eat. Anyway, continue.
Shuffling out every morning and reading the dailies. what have they done to me for Vendetta now?
This picture that is on this article.
It's Alan Moore holding his head with his hands covered in rings and his big beard. I mean, look, it's classic Alan Moore. Look, Alan Moore has once again proven that he is a bit of a dick.
Yeah, look, we're not denying that he is a fantastic writer, but he's a bit of a dick.
Oh, look, Alan Moore, and it's just what he says. He says, I have a huge respect for my audience, and I count myself as part of that audience. But he says, I have a huge respect for my audience. On occasions when I meet them, they seem, I like to think, to be intelligent and scrupulous people. If people do want to go out and buy these Watchmen prequels, they would be doing me an enormous favor if they would just stop buying my other books. When I think of my audience, I like to have a good thoughts and about how lucky I am to have one that is intelligent as mine, as moral as mine. So basically, Alan Moore is saying, if you buy before Watchmen, I don't want you reading anything else I've ever written before.
What he's saying really? Nobody else's writing is ever going to be as good as mine, so you shouldn't read anything else but me.
Possibly. Now, look, the thing is, this is interesting. This sort of raises the whole creator... He raises interesting points. The whole creator-owned comic things. Now, I personally believe that Watchmen was a perfect standalone...
Agreed. We've had this discussion before. Absolutely.
But, again, you know, it's the kind of... The idea of he's created characters, the company that he created them for wants to use them. But he goes on to address the some of the other people who are involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that, you know, considering that the teams that are working on this are, you know, kind of the A-list talent.
Yeah.
So he says, it strikes me that, yes, I can understand why they took on before Watchmen. It would probably be the only opportunity they get in their careers to actually be attached to a project that anybody outside of comics has ever heard of.
Oh, my God.
So I can see, because, like, you know, no one's heard of Superman or Batman.
No, obviously.
So I can see how that would be a great lure. I don't think it would have been done, though, because to go down in history as the people who did the lame rewrites and prequels to Watchmen, well, that's just not for me. But of course, everybody has to make their own choices. So no, obviously, I won't want anything to do with any of the people who are attached to this project at any point in the future, but that isn't a huge loss.
Well, it's okay because nobody visits him out in his log cabin anyway.
So it's too far away.
It's too far away from everybody. I love the fact that he is basically blatantly, along with everyone else, we're also talking about he's blatantly saying to somebody like J. Michael Straczynski that he's a loser and won't be attached to anything. And this is the man who actually has run his own TV series and written feature films and has written his own very successful books as well. Excuse me. And you look and go, you might just have a slightly overinflated sense of yourself.
Well, it's just, I mean, I just imagine people going out and visiting Alan Moore in the woods and him asking him what he thinks and him just saying,
arg.
They wouldn't get that far, though. He'd come out with a shotgun. Get off my yard.
Yeah, he'd come out and you'd just go up to him and you'd get...
And a clean pair of shorts. Oh, look, dear.
Alan Moore, love your work, sir. You are, and I count myself as one of the intelligent people in your audience, I like to think. But that statement makes you a dick.
Yes. And you know what? And he is never going to stop being a sense of amusement for me, I don't think, because he is quite literally the crazy old man in the woods. So.
Oh, no, look, his writing isn't as good as it used to be either. So, but we'll always have Watchmen. We'll always have V for Vendetta. We're always going to have those amazing, amazing books that he's written.
Absolutely. You've got to ask yourself, what was the last... I mean, how long has it been since he has written what could be something that could be considered a masterpiece?
Quite some time. In fact, the last couple of... League of Extraordinary Gentlemen haven't been great.
No.
They've been... And he's basically... they've sort of fallen into, you know, pornography.
But when did the last League come out?
This year it's coming out now. There's like a 3-part thing that's coming out right now.
Oh, okay.
So there's been like every 6 months or something they've released. The last one was set in 1969, and you know they're not great.
No, I think you.
And they're kind of made like their sort of boys' own adventure annuals and things. So it's kind of just an excuse to have a mishmash of stuff that he thought of on the day.
So in other words, he may have kind of run his course on that anyway.
Yeah, like I mean, look, it's been a while since he's written. I mean, look, from Hell and the last League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I mean, probably the last great things he wrote.
Mm.
From Hell finished in 96. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was 99. So it's probably the last great thing he wrote.
Mm.
You know, but look, you know, moving on to, I guess, the DC's future.
Right.
Which is WonderCon, which we hinted at the top of the thing. DC, DC and Marvel. WonderCon is, of course, an annual convention, which is now, I believe, in its 12th year. And it's one of the first opportunities in a calendar year to for the comic book companies to showcase what they've got on the slate.
Now, let's just see if I get this right, because I always get confused by these. WonderCon used to be Show West, is that right?
Let me double check that fact. WonderCon.
I could be completely wrong about that. Of course, I know that Show West changed its name. So.
No, I don't know if it. Oh, I'm not totally sure.
Because one of them actually has movie news and stuff in it as well. And I think that may be WonderCon, yeah?
No, this one is actually organized by Comic-Con as well. So I'm not actually sure.
Yeah,
no,
I think Show West used to be organized by the distributors. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Right, it doesn't matter. We'll move on.
Anyway, it's the same management team as San Diego Comic-Con and the Comic-Con International family. It's been running, I believe this is WonderCon 12. So it's been running for 12 years.
Okay. Because they haven't got enough to do with. Comic-Con, obviously.
Yeah, look, you know, I think it's probably another one of those ways to kind of capture some of that overspill from Comic-Con going ballistic every year. Now, like, all the majors were there this year, and what I thought we'd do this show was just quickly whip through in the next 10 minutes, along with our movie news, some of the major announcements that came out this show. Look, we'll go into some detail about these later, but just first of all, DC... at WonderCon announced a number of new things in the New 52. Some of the ones that I wanted to quickly highlight were they mentioned, they were talking about Batman Incorporated, Grant Morrison's take on the character.
Right.
They were talking about, he said he's going to take it to places no one would expect to go. Thanks, Grant.
Yeah, another issue.
what I thought was really interesting, that Earth 2 is going to be a refreshing of the Justice Society of America. So we know the focus of Earth 2 will be the JSA.
Right.
As we already knew, World's Finest is going to focus on Huntress and Power Girl.
I'm looking forward to that one.
And apparently they're also going to say there's a reason why Karen Starr was in Mr. Terrific.
Oh, I hope they explain that, because they kind of threw it in there and then took it away.
And when we say that she was in Mr. Terrific, we mean in the book. No, she wasn't actually in. They also hinted that the Dial H for Hero, or Dial H as it's going to be called, is not called Text H for a reason. They said there's an expansive mythology there, and they're going to wheel the idea of the dial behind it.
Text H would be terrible.
Now, G.I. Combat said it'll have two stories, dinosaurs in the front and more superhero-type stories in the back.
So, wait. This is the replacement for Men of War, is it?
Yeah, so it's basically going to be old-style war stories at the front and superhero stuff in the back.
It'll be dead in six issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It'll be part of the third wave, Carl.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a few other things there. Scott Snyder was talking about the Swamp Thing, Animal Man crossovers. You know, there's a whole lot of new stuff coming out. They're just sort of hinting at the things that are going to come in the major... arcs that are coming up, as well as the stuff that they're going to give away on Free Comic Book Day. They're saying definitely grab our Free Comic Book Day issues, because they'll each have unique stories that will lead into the next arc following that. Which I always like to see, rather than just, you know, repackaging stuff that they've put out before.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other big news that came out was non-New 52 news, that November is the day that J. Michael Straczynski's and Shane Davis's Superman Earth 1 Volume 2.
I am curious to read that, because I kind of thought that Earth 1 was self-contained. I didn't know there would be a need to make a second one, so it'd be very interesting to see what they do with it.
Very interesting, but I think, you know, November, so we're only a few months away from Man of Steel coming out in cinemas, so I think there'll be a lot of Superman stuff coming out.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so, and particularly if that may be an inspiration for the new Man of Steel film.
Interesting.
Now, Vertigo announced a few titles. They're doing some really great stuff at the moment. We just mentioned that Ferris just came out, and I'm loving iZombie, an American Vampire, which is going to get a spin-off, I believe. And also, you know, that's a great book. That's
what is,
right?
What is, I mean, Fables is not one continuous story. It's a collection of stories. Is that right?
Fables has been a continuous story.
Because I'm just saying that they're also releasing a new Fables, Werewolves of the Heartland.
Yeah, look, they do a whole lot of different Fables spin-offs as well.
Right, okay.
But Fables is the main story. That's about 115 issues in, I think.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Cool. It's been going for a while.
So I shouldn't expect to catch up really fast.
New. Now, just quickly running through these, some of the new titles they've announced are the new Deadwardians, which they've described as Downton Abbey meets The Walking Dead.
All right, I'm in.
And that actually comes out at the end of this month, so we'll be keeping an eye out on that one. So
check that one out.
We'll definitely mention that in what we've been reading in a few weeks' time. Saucer Country just came out this week. It's a, sort of an aliens in America kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Paul Cornell and artist Ryan Kelly wrote that. There's plugging that because that's coming up to a second issue soon. New series called Dominique Laveau, Voodoo Child by Selwyn Hines and art by Denny Cowan. That comes out, it'll come out this week that we're recording, but we'll probably talk about it next week and what we've been reading.
Fair enough.
Get Jiro is an original graphic novel written by Joel Rhodes and TV personality Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, okay.
Which is, and he's the guy that's behind the No Reservations cooking thing. So,
yeah.
I'll be interested to see where that one actually goes.
It's just an original graphic novel, but it's not telling us what it's about.
No, like you said, they said, how do I describe it? It's Dashiell Hammett's Red Harvest meets Kitchen Confidential, set in the world of Blade Runner. Actually, sorry, I think it's Kitchen Confidential, not No Reservations. Red Harvest meets Kitchen Confidential.
It's set in the world of Blade Runner.
In the world of Blade Runner. All right, we're talking...
we're talking Raimi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And also, there's going to be another Fables graphic novel called Werewolves of the Heartland, as you mentioned before, and that'll be out in November as well. Now, over to the other side of the fence, Marvel. Now, a lot of big news around Marvel. One of the biggest stories that came out was the new Captain Marvel.
Not to be confused with the new Shazam.
Not to be confused with the new Shazam. The new Captain Marvel, the character of Carol Danvers is going to be taking on Captain Marvel. Yes, the new Captain Marvel is a woman.
So she's at the moment, she's Ms. Marvel, isn't she?
She's Ms. Marvel, but she will be the new Captain Marvel. Right. So this is, and it's interesting that the artwork they've done from this very much is reminiscent of the old wartime propaganda cartoons of, you know, the woman, the rivet woman holding up her you know, flexing her muscle, doing it for the thing. And they've done artwork reminiscent of that. So they've kind of got this old style propaganda artwork for her and a bold new look for her. So I'm excited to see where they go with that character.
Yeah, I'm pretty cool. I'm pretty down with that. That's all right.
Yeah.
Carol Danvers. There's actually a, I think I've spoken to you about it. We're nervous on the show. One of my favorite moments in Siege, in the Marvel series Siege, was where Spider-Man is fighting Venom, as usual, off in the town. And Ms. Marvel comes flying along. Carol Danvers basically says she starts fighting him too. And Spider-Man explains that there is actually a man inside the symbiote, and she goes, oh, really? So all the power's in the costume? And he goes, yes. So she goes, she just reaches down his throat and pulls him out of the costume. And Spider-Man just goes, why didn't I ever think of that?
That's awesome.
It's one of the best moments in Siege. It really is.
Okay, just quickly whipping through the rest of the stories. There's going to be a new Extreme X-Men book by Greg Pak. I loved the old Extreme X-Men book. It didn't get a lot of love, but the old Extreme X-Men book had art by one of my favorite artists at the time, which was Salvador LaRocca.
Oh, okay.
And this new one by Greg Pak, they've released a bit of artwork for this, and it looks great because it's kind of got this reworked Wolverine with like a big handlebar moustache toting a gun on his shoulder. It's got Emma Frost there, and it's got... Nightcrawler as well.
Okay.
In there. So that's looking quite exciting, and I'll definitely one I'm going to have a look out for because it was a book that I used to enjoy,
right.
And I'd like to see where they go with that. And I'm always interested in a new X book.
Absolutely. I mean, the X-Men still stand up as probably one of my second favorite comics. So
yeah, well, absolutely. And well, you also mentioned that you love Red Hulk.
I do.
And there's going to be they were hinting in the new Hulk storylines, and they were really hyping up the Hulk storylines. Red Hulk is going to be teamed together with Machine Man and Alpha Flight in a story illustrated by Dale Eaglesham. So that'll be interesting to look out for. And finally, in Marvel news, Dark Avengers is launching in June, and Luke Cage is going to be leading the Dark Avengers.
So this is the new Avengers have gone dark, do you think? Because he was in the new Avengers series.
So. Guessing so. So look, all the June solicitations have just come out. There's some good stuff there. There's quite a few number ones, but I will talk about those a bit more in the next show because I thought I'd leave some of the June solicitations to them. But we can talk about this in a bit more detail.
Fair enough.
But I think we're running rapidly out of time. So
as always. So let's have a little bit of this. All right, we'll make this very quick because we've got to get into Buffy.
Absolutely, but we couldn't let this story go because we've been following it forever.
Calling Green Arrow, come in, Green Arrow.
But he came in.
He did. It's no rumor. It's not a rumor anymore.
It's not a rumor anymore. They've released CW have released the first official picture of Green Arrow from the new series Arrow on CW, or at least the new pilot that they've commissioned. And I'm liking what I see so far.
I like it. It's very reminiscent of the Green Arrow character from Smallville. The costume is.
Mm.
So
there's a few minor differences to it. It's a little bit darker. The beard is back. Yay!
Yay!
Because as both wearers.
Wait, not really a beard.
It's more designer stubble, but
yeah,
it's,
but at least it's something.
It's something. He's got facial hair, you know. It's
he looks
good.
Like a grown up.
He looks like he's old enough to shave or not shave, as the case may be.
Absolutely.
The other major bit of story that came out: Warner Brothers, despite the fact that they've got a stable full of DC Comics characters, have bought Mandrake the Magician.
You know, I've never understood the Warner Brother mentality when it comes to film.
Mm.
I mean, they own DC. They have a history here, and they can't seem to get their own films right, with the exception of the Batman films that have been recent, the Nolan ones. But they seem to want to just keep going. And it's almost like they've got this perfectionist quality where it's like, we can't do ours right, so we'll just, it doesn't matter what we do to this one.
Yeah, look, you know, and maybe they want to keep it separate. Maybe they want to keep their DC characters for something special, but we're still waiting.
Yeah. You know, you can only keep them for something special for a period of time until, you know, people forget that they're there.
Yeah, well, look, Mandrake the Magician, they never had any luck adapting. There was a 1939 12-part theatrical serial, and there was a TV movie in the 70s, but it's not really been done anything. I remember Mandrake the Magician from that 80s cartoon, Defenders of the Earth.
Yes.
I used to love that, and that had him alongside, I think it was the Phantom. Who was the other big character in that?
Give me a second. It was the Phantom and Mandrake.
Oh, Flash Gordon.
Oh, Flash Gordon. Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Thus the lightning bolts in the logo.
Yes, exactly right. So, that's coming out. Or should I say? I couldn't let that go.
No, absolutely not. Can I point out, though, that Warner Brothers actually has a character in their stable called Zatanna who could have done a been the
Absolutely.
Magician, you know. It's like, anyway,
or Doctor Strange,
or Doctor Strange.
It's Marvel. Sorry,
no,
it's
Doctor Strange is Marvel. What are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, sorry, I'm actually confused because I did this piece this week on obscure Marvel, comic book superhero movies, I found the old Doctor Strange 1978 TV movie, and that's hilarious.
You're right. I actually really quite like that TV movie. I mean, it's bad, but it's dated, but it was actually not bad. The one you were thinking of, Dr. Fate.
Dr. Fate, that's who I'm thinking of. And I've actually been catching up on Young Justice, the cartoon series.
Oh, what's it like?
It's really good, actually. Like, they've just announced a second season. And again, in the next episode, I'm going to play a little bit of a sizzle reel for season two. But look, they've really got the mix of characters right, and the writing's pretty sharp. And they just did a run with the old Dr. Fate coming back, and you know, the young Justice lead having to actually interact with him and help him defeat somebody. And that was a really good little mini saga that they had in the middle of that. So,
cool.
And that storyline continues over into the second season, is my understanding.
I will have to catch up with the series because I've been hearing good things about it.
Yeah, look, it's playing on Australian television at the moment, both on Go and on the cable subscription network, Cartoon Network. So definitely worth checking out, and not least of which because it's got a female Green Arrow in it. She's called Artemis. She's actually Green Arrow's protege, and he and Red Arrow turn up constantly. The other bit of movie news that we had is that Chronicle director Josh Trank, who was previously rumored to be doing Fantastic Four until he actually debunked that himself.
Yeah.
He's now actually been hired by Warner Brothers to direct The Red Star, which is an adaptation of the graphic novel originally written by Jason Rothenberg.
So he's fast turning into the new Guillermo del Toro, though. You know that.
Don't you? He's been attached to everything.
Because not only was there the Fantastic Four reboot, there was also the Venom at Sony Pictures, where he was going to do the spin-off movie. And so, but has he actually signed for this one?
It says he has actually signed on.
So we may actually have a film this time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one sounds pretty good, though. It's a Soviet-themed sci-fi fantasy comic book series that was created by Christian Gossett. The comic is set in the alternate USSR, where futuristic technology commingles with magical elements. The protagonist is a Red Fleet soldier who goes up against an ex-leader who rules with an iron fist.
Oh, okay, this could actually be quite good. I mean, I'm thinking about see if we can find this comic.
So he's certainly taking it up.
Yeah, well, now what are they saying? 12 million film. How much is what's the budget on this? Did they say?
No, there's no budget listed at the moment. But oh, okay. His last budget was 12 million. So let's see what he can do with presumably.
Well, he made that little film for 12 million. It only made $116 million back. So you know.
Yeah. So like, people tend to notice things when you make several times your budget back.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah. That's just why we keep getting so many Paranormal Activity films.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's for another show. Mm. For now, I think we should move on to some feedback.
Yes, please. Now you got one here.
I've got one here, and actually it's a question that I don't have an answer for, but I thought I'd read it anyway. Andrew Todd on our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/behindthepanels, says, hey, on your latest podcast, you mentioned Avengers versus X-Men and how places are getting cakes for parties. Do you know if any stores in Melbourne, Australia are doing anything? If so, when and which stores? Now, the story we mentioned, of course, was that how much legal paperwork stores had to sign to do an officially sanctioned cake. David and I were actually in King's Comics this week here in Sydney, and we were asking them about whether they had all their forms signed, and they said they weren't doing a party.
They said they weren't doing a cake. I would say if you're in Melbourne, the people to ask would probably be Minotaur.
Minotaur, yeah. They're a great comic shop. I'm sure if you live in Melbourne and you're a comic fan, Minotaur's the place to go to. And there's another place on Bourke Street, and I've forgotten the name of it. I'm sorry, but they're an excellent comic book store as well, and I'm sure one of those two places would be the people to ask about your Avengers versus X-Men parties.
If you work at that store on Bourke Street, write to us and tell us what you're called.
Yeah, look, I go in there every time I go down, but I'm just completely like they're a real genuine comic book shop. I mean, Minotaur's a barn. It's excellent.
Well, Minotaur, I've been going to Minotaur Comics since it was literally a little tiny, tiny little store in one of the little side malls next to Hoyt's on the street, and literally was just comics and magazines, and it was tiny. And then they moved into a bigger premises, and then they moved into a bigger premises, and I've been following them, and now that you're right, they're literally a barn.
Yeah, it's on Elizabeth Street in Melbourne. If you haven't been to Melbourne or if you want to make a pilgrimage to Melbourne, definitely check it out.
Yeah, they are. If you're into film memorabilia or comic books or anything like that, they are just huge.
So sorry, Andrew, I don't have an answer for you, but I'm sure you know of those comic book stores if you live in Melbourne and you're a comic geek like us. So check it out. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of Avengers v X-Men parties out here. I didn't even know that
nobody can afford parties. The legal costs.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that people had parties for the launch of comic books.
I've never seen that, actually.
I think the next big thing to look out for here everywhere around the world is in early May there'll be Free Comic Book Day, and every comic book store everywhere will have something going on for that. So David, we've got a correction.
We do. It was actually a comment on episode 18, the Fall of Bassoons.
Gag me with a baboon.
That's the one. Matteo put a comment on the site basically saying, sorry guys, RoboCop was written by Edward Neumeier and Michael Miner, would later write Starship Troopers. Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo started their careers writing films for producer Charles Band's Empire Studios. They wrote Trancers, released in Australia as Future Cop, The Zone Troopers, and later produced the Flash TV series and wrote the screenplay for The Rocketeer. And I was just saying, I actually wrote back to him and said, yes, we kind of knew that was wrong as soon as we said it. But, these shows are off the cuff. We don't do very much editing. And even though we're not actually live anymore, we still record them as if we are. So,
yeah.
Please send your corrections through. We always like to be corrected if we make a mistake. But yes, you're absolutely right. I take full blame. I'm the one who said it. Although you didn't correct me.
I blame you too, David.
Yeah, but you didn't correct me.
No, but I still blame you.
And as I wrote back to him, if only there was some huge network of computers that we could look stuff up on while we do our shows. We maybe wouldn't make these mistakes, but anyway.
One day, David, one day.
One day, one day. I think we really need to get on to our pick of the week, don't you?
I think so.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. And by that opening music to this show, I think you know what it is, Richard.
It's Archie and Meets Veronica. No, sorry. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8. Written, of course, created by Josh Whit, created, of course, by Joss Whedon, who's making another little film this year called The Avengers. The other writers on the series include Brian K. Vaughan, Drew Goddard, Jane Espenson, who wrote on the original series, of course, and Brad Meltzer, and some others as well.
Well, I was looking at the writers as I was going through, and I can't remember. Did Stephen DeKnight write any of these?
Did who? Sorry?
Stephen S. DeKnight. He also wrote for the original series as well.
I'm not entirely sure.
He also wrote, for those who are wondering, he wrote a film just what was it he wrote recently? No, it was, I think he wrote episodes of BSG. You know what? Matteo's going to be writing in soon, basically telling me I'm wrong.
Yeah, sorry. Some of the other people that said following Loeb, Jeff Loeb, who actually also was more issue 20, so another big comic book writer there. Doug Petrie, Drew Greenberg, and Stephen S. DeKnight, as well as comic book writer Jim Kruger, each wrote an issue.
There's between, his name.
So there's quite a few people.
Basically, it's the creative team behind the last couple of seasons of Buffy.
Absolutely.
Have reconvened under the mantle of Joss, and why wouldn't you?
And look, you know, there was such huge demand for this. I mean, Buffy season 7 ended on a fairly conclusive point.
Yeah, fairly,
With the Hellmouth under Sunnydale being destroyed, and pretty much Sunnydale being left as a hole in the ground.
Hmm.
And the last scene of season 7 was them all standing in front of a school bus, if memory serves.
Yes.
Waiting and talking about these other Hellmouths that had opened up around the world, and the Slayer's work was never done. Fade to black. Cut to 3 years later.
And we open with the marathon run of comic books.
Now, we're talking 40 issues, which we're going to give an overview of. 40 issues plus a couple of Tales of the Vampires and a few follow-up one-shots and so forth. It was originally going to be a 25-issue thing, but it eventually expanded into 40 issues.
Yep.
And I think that just shows what a major cash grab – no, sorry, what a major amount of love there is for Buffy and Angel, of course. Angel had its own season 6 continuation in Angel After the Fall, and there's also a Spike comic book series. Angel does come into this a little bit later on.
But my understanding is that the Joss isn't directly attached to a lot of the other ones. Is that correct?
No, I don't think he is. I mean, his heart is with, of course, Buffy.
Yeah.
Angel wasn't his baby anymore after the first couple of seasons. I think he kind of left that to somebody else to
although
take
he
over.
Did, although he
although
did
issues
episodes.
1 to 17 of the Angel After the Fall series were written with Brian Lynch with Joss Whedon.
Right, okay.
So, but that had a whole lot of things. But that's a different series altogether. We might explore that later. But after 40 issues of Buffy, I'm willing to take a break from the Buffyverse for a while. Not that it was bad, but it is patchy.
It is very patchy.
Now, where we pick up with this, a lot has happened.
Yeah.
And not all of it's explained, and not all of it is explained by the time we get to the end of the 40 issues, which I kind of liked.
Yeah. I like the fact that they leave a few things just kind of out there, and you're never quite sure. But for our people who are listening, Buffy the television series always had self-contained episodes like any television series, and then they also had an overarching, or as they would refer to it, as the Big Bad.
Yes.
That would run in the background. And generally what you would find, the structure of the TV series was that the first half of the series, the first half of a season, would have hints to the Big Bad, but it was really kind of, and funnily enough, if you go back over 7 seasons, it was patchy. They would have these little one-off episodes, blah, blah, building things, building the background. And you would have these hints to whatever the Big Bad is throughout those first half of the season. And then about the halfway point in the season, the Big Bad kicks into gear, and you would carry that story through for the second half of the season. And it was pretty much true for all but the first season, probably.
Yeah, the first season was mostly one-shots, and...
And it was also very short. It was only 12 episodes or something.
That's
like that.
Right. So, and like most Buffy fans will agree that seasons 2 and 3 are the untouchable best episodes of Buffy.
Absolutely.
And probably best 90s television as well.
Hands down.
Certainly best 90s sci-fi television, hands
down. In particular,
down.
Season 2. Season 2 is extraordinary.
It's amazing. And it is where most of us fell in love with Buffy.
Yeah.
And it's certainly where I did. Because I wasn't watching it from season 1. I probably started watching it from about halfway through season 1 sporadically. I went back and watched them all, of course, eventually. And then I really got stuck into it in season 2 and 3. And then I remember I was in my first year I was probably in my second uni degree at that stage. And we were all just talking about it. You know, there'd be an episode of Buffy, and we'd all come to uni the next morning. Go, my God, did you see Buffy last night?
Yeah, we'd become quite obsessed with my circle of friends as well. And it was interesting because I didn't watch it for the first 2 years. And then a friend of mine who was getting, and I kind of caught an episode here and there, and I thought, it didn't do anything for me. And these, of course, were all season one episodes that I was seeing. Mm. And he said, no, you've got to understand, it gets better. You've got to watch it. It's got this. I was a big Trekkie at the time. He's saying, you got, like Star Trek, it does callbacks and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I finally sat down and I actually watched the first three seasons in a row, because season four was just about to start.
Right.
And I found myself kind of going in and out on season one, thinking, okay, this is all right. And then season two came out, and I literally polished off season two in a couple of days because it was like one episode after another, and it just kept escalating. I kept going, wow, this is a completely different show.
Yeah.
You know? Now, back to season eight, it follows that same basic structure. The first half of the issues are very, very patchy, and they're very kind of self-contained, and we're kind of getting all these hints as to something called Twilight coming and all this sort of stuff, and we're finding out how Buffy manages to pay for her army, basically. I mean,
there's one important detail we left out from the destruction of Sunnydale was at the end of season seven, Buffy basically awakened all of the potential Slayers around the world, and there are 1,800 Slayers now rather than just one. Born into every generation, and that has consequences.
That's right. And so now what she finds herself fighting is not only the monsters, but also the humans. Mm. Because her having 1,800 Slayers doesn't go unnoticed by the military.
Exactly right.
And so they're now basically saying, so they're now not only, and as an interesting turn of events, and this is actually coming up towards more of the second half of the book, but it's kind of hinted at as it's going on, the Slayers are suddenly becoming the bad guys. Because they're seen as a threat.
And you can imagine 1,800 girls around the world who have suddenly found themselves imbued with powers that they never had before. Some of them aren't going to be all about fighting the evil. Some of them are going to be the evil.
Exactly, as with those sisters who live on the island.
You can imagine, we had Faith who in the main series. You can imagine there's a high percentage of people who are going to be Faith-like in their... inclinations, but Faith is a very strong character throughout this. I do love the fact that I think you said this, David, that this is kind of like the season they would have made if they'd had an unlimited budget.
Well, exactly, and that's actually one of its first stumbling blocks for me.
Yes,
was the fact that they had these little subplots and stuff like that, where there's one point where they go into the future. And so there's this big science fiction future, which of course is a tie into another Joss Whedon book.
Yeah, called Frey, which he'd written years before. And he actually says he wrote Frey as kind of, he said it, centuries and centuries and centuries in the future, where he thought he never had to connect it to the Buffyverse in any way.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of like the future Slayer. And he wrote this really dark dystopian future. And then suddenly he found himself in a situation where he did kind of have to connect. Rationalize Buffy universe with Frey, so he decided to do a crossover.
Well, interestingly enough, though, he probably didn't, but they did anyway. And that's kind of the problem with this book. It's kind of like, well, we can, so let's do it. And that's not always a good reason to do it.
It was one of the while I think it's cool because I'm all about crossovers. I love my crossovers, but it was probably not necessary given that there was so much else going on in this series. Now, they introduced that element because they were talking about ripples through time as well, which does become important as the Big Bad emerges.
Yep.
Did you see who the Big Bad was coming?
No.
No, neither did I. But no, we'll get to that in a moment.
I have to say I didn't see it coming, but when it was revealed, it wasn't entirely shocking either, though.
It wasn't shocking. You know, actually, this is one thing I want to say about this series now, too. There was a lot of reveals and shocks and character appearances in the thing which weren't fully explained. And I hate to say this of the artists on this, but they didn't always necessarily, and sometimes it could have been a matter of getting the likenesses to the people and the rights to them, they didn't always capture the likeness of the television counterpart. So when suddenly someone turned up, and I'm talking about Oz here, for example.
Yeah, that actually took a few panels before I figured out, until somebody actually said Oz.
Oz. And it was like there was the last panel, it was like a big face going, hey, where have you been for a while? You know, sort of thing. And it's kind of like, was that supposed to be shocking? Was that supposed to, am I supposed to be surprised? Am I supposed to know who that is? And then I get to the next issue, you know, which, you know, when people were reading it originally, because I read this as collections, when, you know, when people read this originally, would have had to wait a month to find out, oh, that was Oz.
Yeah.
You know, that was, so things like that kind of annoyed me. So
I had that same problem with the very first issue, though. I was it the very first or the second? I don't know. It all blurs into one after a while because we've read so many. Was Amy. Because Amy's introduced, and it's not until they finally say, well, she was a rat once, I went, oh, it's that Amy.
Yeah, which is, of course, way back in season two, I guess.
Yeah. Is. And it's like, so, and they when they introduced when they brought Warren back, you know, and of course we knew that he'd been skinned, but it's like it took a while before they explained that it was Amy who had saved him and keeping him alive, and you know, and I had trouble with that because you sit there and if you think back to the TV series, when could that have possibly happened?
Yeah, like there's a lot of things like that happen in here, and you know, flexible reality and all that. I'm not, you know, I don't worry too much about it. Some of the stuff I do like. I like the character that Xander's become.
Yes,
I like that he is now fully in charge of himself, and that he's confident enough to basically lead a cell of slayers.
And can I tell you? Can I tell you? Funniest issues ever in this entire season was where they reintroduced Dracula.
Oh,
and Xander. And what is it? Somebody says in the background, Dracula has a strange effect on him.
Yeah. So as soon as he turns off, he's like, there's Xander. I actually like, I know this is not a popular opinion, but I didn't like Dawn in the TV series.
No, I didn't either.
And I think they should have killed her off when they killed Buffy off. I know they did the Buffy death as a big sort of shock ending. But I think it would have been a perfect character arc for her. She was created for a purpose, and she fulfilled that purpose, and maybe Buffy was never left the same way again. Unfortunately, after that, they were left with this character that they didn't know what to do with. Mm. And they actually acknowledge that fully in the Season 8 comics when they say, of the Scooby Gang, I was always Scrappy Doo.
Yeah,
I know that.
I love this. There's that one line when the reveal of Twilight comes, which we'll come to in a minute. But when the reveal of Twilight, and in the background you've got Dawn just goes, Ben is Hope.
No, yeah. And it's great. So the thing is, and they actually made Dawn a character that was more than a one-dimensional character who spent every episode going, why didn't you think of me, Buffy, when you were out saving the universe?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's what all she did throughout the last season. Now, Buffy got weaker and weaker as it went along.
Yeah. Let's look, season seven.
A lot of people like seasons 4 and 5. I never liked anything beyond season 3 very much. But season 6 and 7 were incredibly patchy.
I still enjoyed all of Buffy all the way to the end.
Don't get me wrong, but it got patchy.
It got patchy, though, and like I said, there was some really interesting stuff in season 4 with the initiative, with the robot, and the military guys. Although I was never a fan of Riley.
He comes back briefly.
He does, and when they reintroduce, and we got to say this up front, this is like, you know, that whole, you know, the unending budget or the, you know, the non-existent budget of this. They literally have brought back every possible character they could have brought back. It's almost like if they said, if we could have every actor come back in from the entire history of Buffy, what would it look like? And this is what it looks like. Because they
Harmony's back.
And that's what I was going to say. That's what I was hinting at the beginning when I was saying that by the second half of the book, the Slayers have become the bad guys, and Harmony has a talk show.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Harmony Bites.
I was just saying, on Dawn, though, I do like what they've done with her, because that is kind of like the major B storyline that runs through season 8, which is Dawn's, or at least certainly the first half of it, Dawn has been in a relationship with a boy named Kenny, who was a thrice wise, to describe. So he's, and when we meet Dawn, she's a giant.
Yeah.
Quite literally. And then later on, she's been cursed with mystical transformations, they find out. She's a giant, then she's a centaur, then she's a living doll, and eventually she apologizes to Kenny for sleeping with his roommate, and he breaks the spell.
And she becomes human again.
Human again. Now, that's good. But then she eventually gets romantically involved with Xander. And that kind of brings me to something else that, and I don't know how to approach this, but it bugged me because I thought it smacked of sensationalism. Which was Buffy was searching for meaning throughout most of this thing. And I think one of the major overarching themes throughout this was her need to connect.
Right.
That she, despite the fact that there were now 1,800 other girls just like her, she felt more alone than she ever had before.
Right.
Then they introduce this as part of her quest to feel connected. They introduce her experimental lesbian phase.
Yeah.
Now, to me, that felt like something to sell issues and not consistent with Buffy's character.
I agree completely.
Because somebody actually makes the comment at one point, really? I always thought you were a bit homophobic. And she was. She was a little bit homophobic in the TV show.
Mm.
She always felt a little uncomfortable around Willow and Tara.
Yeah.
She never quite knew, like, she was supportive because Willow's her best friend. But she always came across as someone who was a little bit uneasy. Now, for her to go and have a lesbian relationship felt out of step with her character and just thrown in so they could have some girl-on-girl action.
Also thrown in because obviously they felt they could get some good gags out of it.
And yeah, absolutely. And there is gags thrown out there, but also they wanted to, and it also felt as a cheap way to have an emotional connection to the character of Satsu. So when that things happened to that character, you felt, oh no, well, she's been in a relationship with Buffy, therefore she's more important.
What's really interesting about all this is you've got this sensationalized lesbian fling of Buffy's, which gets all of this talk, and yet Willow, who is a lesbian, we never get to know her girlfriend
at all.
And she, even when she gets hurt at the end, you sit there and go, I have no emotional connection with you at all. We have never really been introduced to her or given any sort of depth to her character at all. And that's kind of sad because she is an emotional trigger for Willow in the second half of the book. I mean, this is where we're going to get Willow's emotions, and it's taken away from us because we don't know her at all.
Exactly right. And, well, let's face it, the last act of the series begins with Buffy and Angel. Who is revealed, we shall say now, to be Twilight, as the other four supposing her, who has epic sex with her and creates a new universe as a result of it.
Yeah.
that's an interesting sequence.
It's an interesting sequence, but I just felt like this kind of brings me to the conclusion of this particular book, which is I don't think they knew how to end it.
No, and I really don't. And that they've sort of rolled into. And look, you know, Joss Whedon says in his notes at the end of issue 40, and you mentioned this, David, as well, before the show, which was that, you know, we got some stuff right, we got some stuff wrong, but I have a clearer idea of where we want to go with season 9 now. If this had been a TV show, if this had been a TV series, you may have tuned out halfway through the season. Because we had to read 40 issues, I may have dropped this book. Had I been collecting it at the time. Because, you know, we set ourselves the task of reading 40 issues in a week. God damn it, I finished it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But, and look, overall, I enjoyed it. I liked having Buffy back in my life again.
Yeah.
Because it was a huge part of my pop cultural existence for 7 years.
Absolutely. And there is some absolutely joyous Joss Whedon writing here. As well,
look, some of his dialogue. Once he gets back into it, it's great.
His dialogue. He knows those characters so well that he just slips straight back into it. And there's some great dialogue, especially, funnily enough, not necessarily from Buffy. Some of the best dialogue is actually from the side characters. Andrew was always a great character in the series, and Andrew continues to be a great character because he is the ultimate nerd. You know, and he is very funny. And this is the stuff that comes out of his mouth. That sequence with him and Buffy in the car taking the road trip.
Yeah.
And he's just rattling on in the background about all this nerd stuff. And then he mentions Daniel Craig and she stops and goes, Daniel Craig, I know that name. I can talk about this part.
we're connecting now.
And I just thought that was beautiful, you know? And so it's like the moments like this. And I know Joss Whedon didn't write all of this. I mean, there's all these other writers. But there's a heavy Joss Whedon influence, and it's the same with the TV series. He's obviously handpicked his writers because they speak his language.
Yes.
And some of them are better at other things, but there's a consistency to the characters, which has always been there. And that actually does hold in the comic book as well. The patchiness of this comic book comes from its plotting. The plotting is all over the place. Except for Buffy's lesbianism. That's not consistent. I agree.
Apparently, when she was on a talk show, Seth Green informed her of that development. She was unaware of it. And apparently, she was surprised and approved of it. So,
cool.
This is Sarah Michelle Gellar, of course.
Always made me feel bad. And there's actually a scene in the comic book as well where Willow hears about it. And Willow's kind of like, yeah, because you were never on my list anyway.
Yeah. Now, we should say before we finish off, season 9 is now about 7 issues in.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so that came out, I think, just this week. Issue 7 came out, and it's part of the writers this season. The first two issues were written by Joss, and the rest of it's been written by a guy named Andrew Shambliss. Okay. So I don't know that, but it's been a fairly controversial issue in the season 9 so far, as I understand it. And I won't. It's been fairly well publicized, and I think we've mentioned it before, but I won't talk about it any further because we might do season 9 at some stage.
We might. I think I'm going to have to start reading season 9. I actually said to you when I was finished, the season 8 didn't inspire me to want to jump onto season 9. Mm. But I'd be curious to go see where it goes. So
I kind of want to keep reading Buffy now. I'm kind of glad that
Buffy's like I've caught up now. I might as well keep going, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And also, I might go and read what's happening in Angel as well.
I'd like to read Angel season 6. I think that'd be interesting because Angel was mercilessly axed and never got to finish its story.
No, exactly. I'd like to revisit that.
Yeah. The other thing we should mention very quickly, and I know we're running over, so we'll just very, very quickly, but Spike's return, flying around in a blimp with bugs.
Yeah, he's got this kind of metallic blimp ball thing that he flies around piloted by giant cockroaches.
I need to know this backstory.
Yeah. There's got to be. I don't know if there's a Spike comic.
There's some Spike one-offs. I'm going to have it hunter in because they might explain it, but there are some Spike one-offs.
There is a Spike comic book series, and I wonder, and apparently it bridges some of the continuity between After the Fall, which is the follow-up to Angel season 5, and Buffy season 8. So that's worth checking out. That one. So that's been published by IDW, not Dark Horse.
Interesting.
But it also serves as a prequel to the Dark Horse series as well. So
excellent, excellent. All right. Well, look. Overall, it's worth a read. It's not brilliance, but it's worth a read.
Absolutely. And I think if you were or ever have been a Buffy fan, you kind of have to read it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a nice continuation, and some of these characters are very much loved, and you can at least feel those characters again. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, and we should end our talk of Buffy as every episode of Buffy ended with
"Grr, arg."
Excellent.
Okay, well, that brings Buffy season 8 discussion to a close. Next week, having just read 2 giant books 2 weeks in a row, because the week before this we did Mouse,
yes.
Which was an amazing masterpiece of a book.
Which also kind of inevitably led us on to Mouse 2 as well. Two. So it was
so we're
big.
Both exhausted, having just read, you know, I think a few thousand pages worth of comics in the last 2 weeks. Not to mention keeping up, as we mentioned, in the what you've been reading with, you know, all the current issues as well. We're now going to cop out a little bit next week, but also kind of touch back on our very first episode, 20 episodes ago, because we're turning 21 next week, which means we can drink legally everywhere in the world.
I think we should have beer on the table.
Absolutely. it's a deal, David. We can drink legally with the next episode. So we will be revisiting the New 52 formally. We talk about it every issue. But we'll be revisiting the first 6 and a bit months, I guess.
Yeah, well, we will have the inevitable few 7s in there because we're kind of in the middle of 7's release cycle at this point.
Absolutely. But what we really want to do is have a look at, you know, where it's up to, what we're liking, what we're disliking, what we probably won't keep reading long term, and what we think, you know, will probably get shafted. And, you know, really how we feel about DC's New 52 halfway through its first year.
We might also touch on a little bit on some of the side books that have been kicking around as well, because during that 6 months, they've also, the DC universe has been expanding. So there's actually the 52, but there's also a whole bunch of limited series that have been released, such as The Shade and, was it The Ray? Is that what's
Ray, one? There's Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, there's The Huntress.
Yeah, and then there was also, there's a couple of Vertigo books in there as well. There's Spaceman and My Great Adventure. So there's been a whole bunch of this kind of expanding universe around the 52. And it's like they launched the 52 and then kind of went, oh yeah, there's these other ones. So we might talk about, not all of them, but we might talk a little bit about what's going on in that expanded universe as well.
Absolutely. So we'll join us back here this time next week, and we're going to go through that. So you really don't have a lot of reading assignments to do. Just familiarize yourself with what's been happening at the DCU, and we'll join you back this time next week. Well, probably a little bit earlier.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit earlier. We do apologize for the lateness of this episode. It's been a killer week for everybody, just timing-wise, trying to get things. And for those who listen to the Film Action Show, that's late as well. So everything is late this week, but we will be back on schedule next week. So
absolutely.
So, yeah, we do apologize.
We Richard, can only apologize so much.
Absolutely. Richard, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
They can find me at therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com. And I've sort of done a little bit of a tweak to the front page of the site this week, and I've made some of our comic news a bit easier to find. So for you comic fans who want to follow me around, that's where you can find me. Also, hit me up on Twitter at DVDBits, because I do a lot of my reactions to things on there.
Cool. All right. And you can also find me at Geek Action Now. Also, like you've been tweaking, I'll be tweaking as well. So I got to mention this as well. Not that kind of tweaking.
you dirty boy.
Just to let people know, over the next 2 weeks, you may find Geek actually going up and down. No, it's not that we haven't paid our bill. It's because we are actually, I've gone back into full swing trying to redesign the site. So you will find times where the site goes down while we're in the middle of doing things. So if you log in and it's down, just come back in a couple hours because it will be back up again. Because
right.
You know what it's like working with WordPress. You've got to kind of do it live.
Yes.
So if the site is down or you find a feed is dead or something, no, we haven't disappeared. It's just we're in the middle of restoring and rebuilding a site at the moment. So this is the site rebuild that I've been planning for like the last 5 months and haven't had time to do. So
it's a big thing. I mean, I did it last year and you just got to do it like a Band-Aid.
I know, it's terrible. But the problem is, the problem that I face with this is the fact that every time I put that screen up that says the site is closed, it kills the podcast feeds.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's not just a matter of the site going down, all the feeds die. So it's I can only literally keep it closed for like an hour at a time. Otherwise, everybody's feeds die.
Right.
So it's annoying. The feeds just come back alive again as soon as you open it. But yeah, when you put that we're closed thing up, everything closes.
That's a shame.
It is. It's very annoying. Anyway, so just to let you know, that's what's going on. That's it. That's a show, guys. I think that's it, isn't it, Richard?
That's pretty much it.
Just to should explain, just in case you haven't seen it, the closing music is going to be a little bit different. It is actually still Buffy-related, believe it or not. There was a musical episode of Buffy, a genius musical episode of Buffy, in season, I want to say 6. Is that right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I think it was in season 6. We are going out with a very quick track from that because it just makes me laugh every time.
It was called Once More with Feeling, the episode.
Absolutely.
No, it was in the 7th. It was the 7th episode in the 6th season.
7th episode in the 6th season, that's right. And it was the season where she came back to life.
Yes.
And it was right. Kind of the episode that finally explained why she was being so morbid all the time.
Apparently, Joss Whedon spent 6 months writing the episode.
And he wrote all the music as well.
It was the first time he'd written music.
Yeah, and it's genius. It's brilliant. And the song that you're going to hear is actually They Got the Mustard Out. And it's from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I hope you enjoy it. We'll see you all next week. Richard, see you next week, dude.
See you then, David.
They got the mustard out. They got the mustard out.